welcome to the 134th Monkey My Back podcast.
Good evening, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Jane.
And I'm Nick.
Or good morning or afternoon, depending on when you're listening to it. So.
It's asynchronous. Or it's, yes, your, they can listen to it whenever they want.
Your ass is synchronous.
Your face.
Thank you.
It is. Yeah. It is existing at the same time as I am.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Yeah. So how are you two? Are you good? I'm not even going to delve into it. I've already had that joke at the beginning explained to me.
Yes.
So if you didn't understand it, listener, that's fine. It's a private joke, but it's very funny if you're in on the joke.
If you were around my house last night watching the programme we were watching together, you'd find it fucking hilarious.
Hi, Nicola.
She doesn't listen.
Well, standalone, you just might think it's amusing that people would want to protect cat scratching posts.
Yes.
Do you just not force her to listen to it anymore?
No, well, because there's foul language in it. We used to listen to it in the car, but because there's foul language, generally my child's in the car, so I can't have her listening to her father. I'm really the only one who swears as well, so it's my fault that I can't play our own podcast back to my child, which probably suits me, really.
You fucking idiot.
Fuck hell.
Well, I used to call you a fucking idiot all the time.
That's
Why
true.
Did I stop? Did he stop being a fucking idiot?
You just accepted him.
Oh, I accepted
him. Yeah. And that was it.
That's good of you to do so as well.
You haven't embraced him.
You've just accepted him.
I have embraced him a couple of times. Well, not all of them at once.
Emotionally, not physically.
Just a little bit of him in the palm of my little hand.
You both make me feel a little bit violated right now. I'm not just an object of your... Well, I suppose I am.
You
really
are.
Right.
Yes, you are. I'm not going mad. I'm not hearing voices in my ear, Jane. I heard an echo. That's why I was looking around as if something weird was going on.
As if someone had just said, don't look round, there's a camera there or something. And
no.
You knew the room had been bugged. Yeah. No.
We haven't narcissistically filmed ourselves doing this for ages.
At the point when it became clear that no one was going to strip off, I just figured the punters didn't want it anymore.
Hello,
so what are you guys? What have you guys been up to?
Stuff.
Yeah, wow.
Stuff. I've been watching a lot of DC animated movies. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit later.
Yeah.
Which is good. One of them, not so much. What else have I been doing?
We watched Drop Dead Gorgeous, not the TV programme, the film.
Yeah,
Dance.
I enjoyed that. It surprised me. Yeah.
Good.
It was good.
I did not know there was a TV programme. Is it based on
a
film?
No, it's not based on a film.
I think I perfected my recipe for chorizo pasta last night.
Chorizo!
I think I've hit it nail on the head with that now.
Do you buy it in slices or in sausages?
No, there's a... Sainsbury's does a nice chorizo ring, which is my preferred chorizo choice.
I always get Amy some from Waitrose for Christmas. She's got a big sausage in her stocking.
Waitrose chorizo is very nice too. I think he just claimed that his wife's hermaphrodite.
No, her Christmas stocking. I put a sausage that I have bought, so strictly speaking, it's mine. Mm. I put my sausage in her stocking.
Nice.
It's spicy.
It is. You rock it old school, you guys.
Chorizo.
And I bought shoes for my daughter last week on my
That's
day
good.
Off.
That is it
nice.
Her first pair of shoes? Has she
no,
been unshod till now?
Unshod? She's not a fucking horse.
No, I mean, have you left her without shoes, like
no.
an urchin child?
You've seen... You've seen her with shoes on.
Have I?
And delightfully, she's learnt the word now.
Excellent. That's good.
Really good. Really pleased she's learnt the word now. This way, she's learnt a now.
Is it your one that's like that does the tap dancing at the level of an 18-year-old who's been practicing their entire lives in a weird Uncanny Valley-esque way?
If you like.
She's got that big smile. She just smiles at you the whole time and her feet are just going tick, 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 tick.
If you like. Yeah. Why not?
And then she takes your soul away to the dark place.
Okay. I don't know what's happening. I do feel a
little uncomfortable.
No, I've been having a lot of really vivid dreams this last week, so I might start splitting into her. See, in the vivid dream I just had, James turned into one of those little monkeys that slams the little bells together.
What else have I been doing? I got my Lord of the Rings extended editions out, and I've been rewatching those, and I've been delighted with the rewatch value that those contain. I'd forgotten how much I'd enjoyed them. I think I mentioned it the other day. I'm on to the Return of the King now, and it's like the Two Towers from Return of the King. I think I prefer more than Fellowship now, and I like Fellowship best at the time.
I like the second one the best.
Two Towers.
Yeah, it's peculiar because I always previously thought, what's his name, Leopathides, Anthony Kiedis, the Gollum guy.
Oh, Andy Serkis.
That's the one, Andy Serkis.
Theopathetus.
I always thought he was a little bit like Anthony Daniels in that when you saw him in interviews, he was a little bit, oh, well, of course, the best thing in the film is my performance as the thing. But then when I saw the monkey film with him in...
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
That one, and the other one, King Kong, I thought, no, he really is the best thing in most of the films he's in.
He's a mocap genius.
He is a mocap...
King Kong... That's not hard to do, is it, really?
I don't know. I like that film.
Do King Kong.
I don't like King Kong.
I want to see you do King Kong.
And I love Naomi Watts, so I was a bit sad about that film. And Asia Brody.
You didn't like it, or you didn't like the monkey in it?
No, I didn't like the film.
Oh, okay.
I've never seen it.
I thought he did a very good job.
Jack Black's in it. I like Jack Black.
I quite liked him in that. I liked it. It was a bit long. And I didn't like the bit that was obviously done for, like, there's a bit in the middle where they're all being chased, there's a stampede, and it was so completely, well, this will be good when we do the eventual Disney ride or whatever it was. Like, you know that bit in films where they always have, like, in lots of CGI films, especially with dinosaurs, there has to be a bit where there's a stampede, and it's wacky because people are surviving when they really shouldn't be because they're under the feet of gigantic dinosaurs. That bit annoys me.
Just touching and going between the gaps between their toes and so, whoa!
And no one has got dinosaurs as good as they did in that first Jurassic Park, so they might as well all just give up until they actually manage to clone dinosaurs and train them to act in films.
Dinosaur.
That's what I reckon. Yeah, that was brilliant.
That was the best George Pig impression I've ever seen.
Was it George Pig? Does he say dinosaur?
That's pretty much all George Pig says.
Yeah, dinosaur. And he cries.
That and no. He says no.
My favourite is the baby in Dinosaurs. The programme.
Oh, I
it's basically
that.
Like
the
Flintstones or something. But,
he
just used to sit in the corner and say, not the mama.
I just remember dinosaurs being awful.
It wasn't good, but the baby used to say, not the mama. And he was funny.
That was good. Look what happened to him, eh?
He, bad times.
Dinosaur porn.
Apparently he's got a walk on. He's quite, he's got a little bit of cult cachet now, though, after the porn and the early appearance in Dinosaurs. So he should have a walk on part in next year's movie adaptation of Flesh from 2000 AD.
Is he going to be Gorehead?
With Screech.
Just 90 minutes of Gorehead running around going, I'm not going to die, am I?
Screech doing an impression of a pterodactyl.
Oh, it's a little bit early for me to have done the thing that I'm going to regret doing when I listen back.
What's that, an impersonation?
Yeah.
Of a dinosaur?
Yeah.
It's always the impersonation of a dinosaur that gets you, James.
There's always at least one thing every week when I listen back. I'm walking to work or something. I just have a horrible little moment of remorse.
I think most of the people who listen just listen for your moments of zen. They call them your moments of zen.
Do they?
Where you inhabit another character.
Yeah.
They love it.
Good.
And
scene.
So that's what you've done, Jane.
It's been a tough week.
I've been playing Skyrim.
Oh, that's what I've been doing. Bioshock at the weekend.
Bioshock's great, the first one.
Yes.
Oh, I like
it's
that.
Awesome. I had to make my decision. I'm quite early on in the game because I get the problem is it's one of those games you do need a good couple of hours to play it. So I haven't had the chance here. I'm quite early on in the game, and at the scene I've just had to make the decision whether or not I rescue the girls or not.
The first one. Mm-hmm. Oh,
I rescue them.
Good girl, well done.
Because they're so grateful.
Yeah. All of them.
Yeah, everyone I meet. All right, that's got a big daddy.
Because you can change your mind later and kill them.
No, I played. Oh, I rescued them all.
I got really creeped out by the little girl and big daddy early on in the game, and I was really scared when I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna have to come up against them." And then I saved little girl, and then I killed big daddy. I'm like, "Oh, that's not that scary."
Yeah. They get like less and less powerful as you play through the game. They're a bit like aliens.
Yes.
They're really, really scary in Alien. One of them's really scary in Alien, and then in Aliens, they seem like it's what's really scary is that there's loads of them.
Yeah.
I like Bioshock. I didn't really play Bioshock 2. I'm very excited about the next one. Bioshock Infinite. Mm. That looks good.
Yeah.
Do you think
listener
heard that? Sorry, go on, Jane.
Isn't that in an Alien film?
It reminds me of something I read this week, talking like that.
They mostly come out at night.
Yes. That's it. Yeah, that's what it makes. I don't know.
Sibilance.
I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I've been watching Luther.
I liked that.
It's very good.
It's a historical drama about the... Was he a poet?
That's right.
Luther... Martin Luther. Something like that.
A reformist. Renaissance reformist.
It's got Heimdall in off the wire.
It's got what?
Heimdall in off the wire. Idris Elba. Idris Elba's in it.
Yeah.
He's Heimdall off the wire.
Yeah, don't you remember that episode of The Wire where Thor was right up in it?
Yeah, no, he is. So you've been watching.
Luther.
What did you think? Did you try and watch it the first time when it was on?
No, I completely passed it by. I think it was because it was on a Thursday evening.
People were weirdly and unnecessarily hard on that first on that first episode, and I thought that was ridiculous. They're unnecessarily when he's in that, I think because it's quite early in the episode, and he's talking to the girl whose parents have died, and she isn't that bothered. So, or she doesn't seem that bothered. And so he works out that she might be a psychopath based on the way she answers a question. And I saw a few, articles ridiculing that. And it was like, well, but he's supposed to be insightful.
The yawn test. Yeah. He did the yawn test.
But that's quite insightful. You see that in loads of... That's, quite good profiling and stuff. So it's kind of... James is obviously guilty of something. He's yawning now.
She doesn't have empathy, so she's a sociopath.
Oh, I see. But I didn't yawn then when you did.
Yeah, you did. Now we're
only pretending. I was only pretending.
Okay. We should leave.
But anyway, so and everyone was going, he'd work out, he'd try and arrest a woman based on that. And I was like, well, but he's supposed to be, he's got insight, and he's supposed to have evidence. But he always goes on his insights. That's kind of on instincts. That's kind of the setup for the whole show.
He's like Edmund Elephant, in so much as he is a clever clogs.
Yes, is he? Is that what Edmund Elephant is?
He's a clever clogs.
Peppa the Pig?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all I fucking watch.
And I liked it a lot better than Sherlock. I liked it a lot.
Sherlock was fine, but it was a little bit too slick for its own good,
yeah.
I thought.
No, I think I like Luther more than Sherlock.
Yeah, I do. It's gritty.
Definitely after seeing the second lot of Sherlock.
You watched the second series of Luther yet?
It's
very good.
One episode left.
Yeah, it's awesome.
No, what? It is amazing. Oh, my God. But it's...
Oh, she'll do the role players.
Oh, yeah. That's horrible.
That is horrible.
What I like about the first season, I just love that. The one from the first episode who doesn't yawn. I love her.
She's creepy.
She's amazing.
And at first you think maybe she's overacting a little, maybe it's a bit melodramatic, but you start to... And in the second series, that girl who he ends up with, who just talks in a way that no one in the world has ever talked. She really grew on me really quickly.
Billy Piper Minor.
Yeah, I think maybe she's a bit better than Billy Piper.
I liked her.
Billy Piper if raised by minors.
Your stomach just sounded like a stone being dropped in a cave.
There's nothing in it, that's why. Oh, fair enough. The tapeworm's trying to commit suicide. It's eating itself.
That's
the
best
end.
Way to get rid of it. But yeah, that's good. I like it. And I like that it's quite melodramatic. And in the first episode of Luther, he works something out in a much more convincing and significantly faster time than Sherlock works out the exact same thing in the first episode of that. They both think, who would they go with? They don't know them, but they would go with them. Must be a policeman, must be a fireman, probably a doctor. Sherlock just goes through every single possible thing except a taxi driver, spoiler warning.
You know what's good, though, is Idris Elba is a lot less chinny than Cumberbatch.
I quite love him, Idris Elba.
He's a bit chinny, though. Idris Elba.
Yes.
I like his chin.
He's rugged.
Cumberbatch has got too much chin.
I like the way he can see everything that's happening in the universe all at once.
Mm.
I like that.
And there was a scene in the first series that made me think of a scene with him in The Wire. The scene where he dies in The Wire.
I haven't seen The Wire yet.
Oh, okay.
So right. You've spoiled The Wire.
He doesn't, though.
I'm sorry,
she's joking.
Something because 10 years later.
I haven't watched it. How long have you known me? And I've been saying, I'll get around to watching The Wire one day.
You won't watch it, though. It's too... It's too slow for you.
You will not
enjoy it as much as other people.
Is it too decompressed? Will
yes,
it annoy me?
It will, yes. Yes, but it is awesome. Okay.
At this point, I don't agree with either of you on spoilers or anything, so it's okay. But it's great, and he doesn't really die. It's the sort of show where people come back from the dead all the time. Don't worry about it, James.
It's like comics.
Yeah, he and dies. The Walking
they
Dead.
They all die.
Well, we all do.
We all die eventually.
Yeah.
I have played Skyrim. That's been the main thing I was doing. I got it from the film.
What type of character are you?
I'm a female dark elf. They're not attractive. I tried really hard to make her attractive.
Yeah.
Just can't do it. So now I'm the first not sexy. I'm basically the first female character in a game that I didn't kind of want to be, but also kind of want to be with.
Elves aren't sexy, but they're beautiful.
The wood elves are.
No, they're not
the
sexy.
The wood elves are quite sexy.
No, elves shouldn't be
well, they're
sexy.
Quite cute.
They should have a sort of a distant beauty.
But the dark elves are pretty much all grotesque.
Like Cate Blanchett.
Yes. Oh, also, I played the demo of the first episode of The Walking Dead game, and that's quite good.
It's
pretty fun.
I saw
a putty cat?
A trailer.
I saw a video, not trailer, I saw a video with one of the... creators of the game, and somebody was interviewing. They had they showed like the first scene, I think it was, of the game. It was brilliant. It's really, really good.
It's really good. It's interesting. It's like it takes the form kind of a point and click adventure, which is quite interesting. But it looks so pretty, and the decisions you make apparently
will
play into the relationships later on. So.
I like the decision thing of it. It's got more than just a killing zombie thing going on, and the decisions.
So I might buy that.
Because
I only played the demo, so I might buy that.
The question I want to answer is, when is Dragon's Lair coming out for console?
7.
Good.
27. Of September.
September?
1976.
Wicked.
Good on year. The Xbox 790-12.
I remembered something else I did my week.
Oh, did you? Your bit's gone. No, go on. As it's you.
I watched the football and we got promoted to the Premiership.
Well done!
Yay!
You definitely contributed to that with your cheers. Because football teams are like fairies if you don't believe in them. What?
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
No, they are. If you don't believe in them, they wink out of existence.
Just to make sure, you've got to clap three times.
No, we need to make up new rules. What can we get them to do?
I think the power of love is what's making them succeed.
Do you remember when? Do you remember when there were two songs called that in the charts?
It's very confusing because there was Huey Lewis.
Was it Jennifer?
It's the power. That's the power of love.
Yeah. Was it Jennifer Rush?
It's colder than diamonds.
I am your lady.
And bricks like steel.
Mm.
You won't feel nothing till you feel. That's Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
And then the other one, go on.
I'm sure.
Because I'm your lady, you are my man.
La 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 la, power of love.
I'll do all that I can.
Yeah, it's at the same that time, one. It's in the top 10. Both
I think
of them.
I think I'm crying a bit.
Same
now.
Title. It was such a confusing few
I think
weeks.
There's a, I think there's a third song called The Power of Love as well.
Probably.
If the listener could.
Maybe that should be our question this week. Name as many songs.
Yeah.
Called The Power. And I'd just send in a list of The Power of Love. No band names, but I just write it 62 times in an email.
This is the one Huey Lewis in the News song, but by 60 different people at karaoke. Very, very different cover versions.
I miss Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah, I don't. I'm kind of uncomfortable with the fact that American Psycho has made it sound like it's weird liking them, because everyone liked them in the 80s.
But I always think of American Psycho.
Back to the Future, they were brilliant.
Did, that's just the way it is, or was that Bruce Horn
no,
doing the range?
Huey Lewis wrote that song,
all right.
But Bruce Hornsby and the Range performed it, and Bruce Hornsby wrote a couple of Huey Lewis and the News songs as well.
Oh, it's quite incestuous.
Yeah, I think they were brothers who had sex with each other. So yes, you're absolutely right. Should we talk about comics?
Yeah, let's talk about comics.
I like what James has written here is we are doing the spinning hors d'oeuvre. Hors d'oeuvre. How do you say that?
Hors d'oeuvre.
Hors d'oeuvre. The spinning hors d'oeuvres.
Spinning hors d'oeuvres.
I like your French accent by way of Ray Winston.
Thank you. Bet now.
Okay. This
I
week.
Feel a bit disoriented. Sorry. What you got?
New 52. New Woo-hoo! 52. New 52. The new 52. The second new 52.
Second wave. Is not it the not the second. Third wave,
I,
though?
I can't, I've lost count. Yeah. More. More DC titles.
How long are they going to keep? It can't be accurate anymore. It can't
no.
have only been.
I picked up Dahl H for Hero.
Dahl H for Hero.
Dahl H for Hero.
H.
H.
From Steps, right?
No.
Yeah, it is all about him. Yeah. No, it isn't.
Yeah, by China Mieville.
Mieville. Who...
And Mattis Santoluco. Yeah, Santoluco.
Stand back and take a run up at that one.
No, my eyesight is so bad at the moment.
It's
really
quite a difficult name. It's Mattis Santoluco and it's China Mieville, I think. But it was weird because I must have missed where that was announced, but I was surprised when I saw that name, because he's like a novelist. Who,
yeah.
He, she? China's a...
I think it's a guy.
In your hand, that's the pal.
Yeah. It's about Frankenstein, that song. Well, the monster, strictly speaking,
I didn't
about
know
the monster.
That.
You can only really tell on the 12-inch version.
Funny presence on Twitter, Carol Decker. Anyway, sorry.
But yes, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, this is from what I've read... A resurrection of a series from the 80s, which was then resurrected again in 2003. And it's about a telephone box. Not a Doctor Who-style telephone box. It's basically, we're introduced to... his name is not Darren, because I kept wanting to call him Darren. Nels. Sure, it's short for Nelson. Nels, who used to be a professional boxer, things have gone pretty tits up for him, and now he is massively overweight, smokes a lot, and is recovering from a mild heart attack.
Sounds like my kind of guy.
He has one friend, I think his name's Gary, who's concerned about him but annoyed at him at the same time for not pulling himself together. This is quite a fast-paced comic. It jumps straight into it. You had a little bit of an introduction.
It's crazy ass.
Yeah, it is.
I started reading it. I haven't been able to finish it yet.
You sort of introduce the characters. You realise it's when Gary works for some... I think it's Gary, I keep saying. He looks like a Gary.
He works for some shady types.
Shady types, yes. I think it's fair to say he's mixed up in some not quite above the law...
Is he part of a cat scratching post... Racket.
Yes.
Bastard.
We don't know, I don't think, yet. He might be. It might turn out that way.
Are at the pinnacle of the downfall of society.
Well, I've decided that
you're the pinnacle of the downfall of society.
Indeed. Or the offs.
Maybe we don't even find his name out. I'm just going to call him Gary.
Good.
And, he runs into... His friend, Gary, runs into some trouble. They had a bit of a, like I said, disagreement because he's not, Nels isn't taking care of himself and his friend's concerned about him and they're a little bit hard on each other. So as they part ways, they're both feeling a bit bad. Gary runs into some trouble. I keep saying Gary with such confidence as well. I don't really know.
Gaz top. It's because he's wearing a tracksuit. I think that's why you're calling him that.
No, I don't know why I'm calling him that.
Why don't, if it's not right, read it after we finish recording.
I'll edit it in.
Yeah, and you can just record the correct name. And every time you say Gary, Nick can just edit you in saying, Bertram.
It's going to be a lot of hassle.
No,
it's going to be a lot of hassle actually working out what his real name is. So if Jane just says every single man's name that exists,
that's,
and I'll cut the right
it.
One in. Yeah. I think.
Oh, you just reminded me of something else I've done this week.
every single man
no.
in the...
No.
Oh, dear.
That took you a while, James.
He runs into some trouble and Nels goes after him because he wants to apologise, finds him being set upon, and he's wheezing and he's grabbing for a phone to try and dial 911.
He's incredibly out of shape.
Yeah, really out of shape. And he just fumbling for the numbers. Suddenly there's an explosion from the phone box and he turns into the most awesome thing I've seen in a comic book.
It's crazy, monstrous, crazy chimney boy.
Chimney boy who kills his victims with smoke.
Yeah, good.
He's got weird smoke-based powers.
Yes,
he's weird.
He's brilliant. But he's a goodie because he's still Nels and wants to rescue his friend.
Yeah.
So that was quite bizarre. It turns out this phone box we're just learning about can turn you into a... I don't know if superhero is the right word.
But an other thing.
But it's only temporary. And it changes the next time you do it. So, Chimney Boy now, someone else next. But from what I've read about Dial H, the original series, is there can be reoccurring characters in there. So.
It's really, really different from the very first series. I think, was it maybe a cartoon? I don't know, but it was the original was really cheesy. And I think there was an audience participation element to it as well. It was kind of from the same sort of time as the Wonder Twins sort of thing. So there were a couple of young kids who did all... So it's a bit... This is really different. It's like a horror... Well, is it... You said earlier it's one of their...
Dark
books.
Yeah.
So...
It's really quite strange. Darren. Is his name Darren? We'll go with Gary. I like Gary better.
I'm really, really remembering the beginning of Reservoir Dogs, where they're sat around the table. Mickey Chang, Mickey fucking Wong.
Now I want breakfast.
It's great. I liked it as well, what I've read of it so far, and thankfully you only got as far as the bit that I was up to.
Yeah,
so
I'm not going
to
spoil the crap out of it.
But
it was, it's good fun, different, and it's part of the Dark series, which I've been enjoying. Oh, let's see how it goes.
Nice looking book,
yes,
isn't it?
Sorry, the artwork is... I mean, I didn't even discuss it, but obviously Chimney Boy is just mentally insane looking. Mm. Really creepy gothic horror thing going on, but with a bit of
Has he got a vintage feel with a new age twist?
Yes, that's it.
A vintage feel with a new age twist. Yeah, like kind of like that.
Yeah.
Like Ebenezer Good. He's a lot like Ebenezer Good. Crossed with nicotine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like.
no, the character nicotine from the 80s.
Oh, I thought you meant actual nicotine.
He was Superman. Was
I was born in 1985, Nick. I don't remember very much before.
And that's this week's listener question. What year were you born in?
Back when lots of people still read them. There was a campaign in this country, I think it was only in this country actually, to stamp out smoking, to educate kids about not smoking, Jane. And it was Superman was in them, and it was the villain was called
Nicotine.
That was his name.
And Superman, with his super strength, crushed a packet of cigarettes.
Yeah.
Which was pretty unimpressive. Even as a child, I thought...
Looking back,
I could probably crush a packet of cigarettes.
It didn't occur to me as strange, but when you watch video of it now, when you watch the videos, it's really weird because it's Superman versus this English...
Yeah.
This English villain.
Weedy. probably he should have sent. I would have personally sent the Green Lantern,
but not.
I think he's below
Superman.
Superman,
but not English, not American cartoon English. Mm. He's just like a English actor doing them. It was weird. It was very weird and low rent.
Like John Constantine smoking Englishman.
Hmm. Yes, I think that's where Alan Moore got the idea from.
Maybe, yeah.
He needs to stay out of other people's intellectual property, that dude.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what else have you read?
I have read Too Much Sex and Violence.
We know that, but what book have you read?
issue 3 at a bargain price of £2.75, free postage and packaging if you are in the UK. Obviously,
it's worth moving, then.
Yeah. I think if you run the numbers, it makes sense.
Well, with postage going up in this country, it is a bargain.
Exactly.
By Roald Hurst. We like Roald Hurst. With a all-star cast of artists. With Martin Eden, Adrian Bamforth, my eyesight is so bad.
An unpronounceable cast of artists.
Calvin Green, Rob Wells, Stephen Prestwood, Nigel Lowery, Andrew Cheventon, Chris Ascombe and Dave Metcalf Carr. My eye really needs to go to the opticians. As
your eyes really need to go to
the opticians. No, because it's not actually Too Much Sex and Violence you're reading. It's actually Bunty.
No.
Great cover by Martin Eden as well, but you probably can't see
it. It's a mixture of all of them.
Oh, is it? The lady is very Martin Eden.
That is Martin Eden. But it's everyone's done to it. So. The story continues. It still has the Psychoville, League of Gentlemen, but with like a Midsummer Murder British crime element to it. It's brilliant. It's so well written, and there's quite a few characters in there. Roald does an excellent job of just a tiny little introduction about who they are and what they do, and that's what you need. It's brilliant. There are quite a lot of characters in here, so you are keeping up with quite a few stories going through, but there's no problem with it at all. It's so easy to remember and so easy to pick up and continue the story, but I want to give it some love because it's really good.
Is it as ethnically diverse as Midsummer?
Oh, it is. I mean, I don't want to spoiler it. But
it is or it isn't as
Sorry, I thought you were going to say...
It's more ethnically diverse.
Much more.
He was tricking you with language.
Yeah.
Because I got excited about what I was going to talk about now. Spoiler alert, in the second issue, a body is discovered. And the body has 4 arms and 2 penises.
I can see
that's
that
how diverse it is, James. It's great. All the characters are really well developed. Everyone has their own story, everyone has their own secrets, and everyone is connected.
It's all connected. Does it count as hermaphrodite if both the genders you are male?
No.
Do they cancel each other out?
That must be something else. Bi penis.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Jane.
Okay,
I really like that. I need to catch up on that.
And the last little bit is I've been watching Firefly this week.
Oh, that's good.
That's why I said about boys' names, because there's a man in there called Jane.
Yes.
Which
you might not remember, but when... Was it Tim who did Jane's song long while ago? It was to the tune of... how far into Firefly are you?
I've seen the episode that you're talking about.
Yeah. So he did a song based on...
beautiful, haunting song.
It was haunting.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen Firefly before then, and so much stuff makes sense now.
So you probably said it just everything.
Everything just makes sense. People saying Shiny makes sense. The brown coat thing makes sense. Joss Whedon doesn't make sense.
Have you not seen
sense.
It yet? Basically, if
I'm not spoiling it.
She isn't spoiling it.
Because I've heard all these phrases. Sorry. You've heard these phrases. You've heard people saying these things. I've
never heard the word shiny before.
Yes, you have. It's when something shines, you fucking idiot. Jeez Louise. You've just not heard it used that way before. That's because of Firefly. It happens in an episode wherein something... I can't even remember.
I really like it, and it's better than Buffy. There you go. Controversial. I put it out there. It's better than Buffy.
It didn't get the chance to get as slow as Buffy did in later seasons, so...
That's
maybe.
True, but I still like it more than Buffy.
We've been watching a lot of Castle. It isn't as good as Firefly, but it is nice to see Nathan Fillion. He's lovely. I like him. Oh, and if we are catching up on little bits of TV we watch, we finished watching Spartacus. God, that show is so completely not something I can recommend to anyone.
It's just gore and sex, isn't it?
It isn't just gore and sex, but there's enough of it in there that you can't really recommend it to anyone. It's like, what's the matter, James? You look
nothing,
sick.
I'm right. No,
you look
I'm
a bit
fine.
Plooky.
No, I'm fine.
I think Nick should talk about Flights.
Yeah.
No, I was doing a grumpy, fed-up face because you're talking about things that I haven't watched, but I was only doing it to amuse
myself.
Oh, is
that
myself.
What you were doing?
That's
I
what
thought
I was
doing.
Firefly
that was just your...
is 10 years ago.
I thought that was just your face.
List. I'm going to buy it.
You should borrow it from me.
I'd like to own it, but thank you.
I read, before I get onto the comics I bought this week, I read the first issue of Andrew Cheverton and Chris, yes, and Chris Doherty's The Whale House, which is actually a story that Andrew Cheverton has been wanting to do for a really long time. But now Chris Doherty, who did Video Nasties, which I talked about a few spotlights ago, has done the art, and it's actually starting to happen. And it's cool. So I think it's going to be released at Bristol. When is Bristol?
Soon.
It's really soon, isn't it? But I think he's releasing it at Bristol. He's hoping to make it digitally available. It's going to be a black and white book. Amazing cover on it. And it is about... It's set in England. It's a very England... I think it's a very British story, really. About a chap called Dig... which is short for Diggory, which isn't a name I'd heard before.
I've heard Diggers. I don't think that's their real name, though.
Oh. Because it could be short for a bunch of different things. I've never heard the name Diggory, though. But basically, he's a guy who his... it transpires that his... through him talking to his friend over some drinks, that his parents have recently died, and... during the reading of the will, he's discovered that he was adopted.
Oh God.
And so he he's also having problems with his girlfriend a little bit, and so it seems like a good time for him to go off and spend some time by himself, and she thinks he's going to go look for his real parents. He doesn't really know what he's going to do. He goes off out into the countryside. You have like a couple of very telling conversations with his friend, his best friend, and with his girlfriend. And then he has a accident and ends up in a strange scenario in one of those in the middle of the English countryside where strange things tend to happen sort of stories. Don't necessarily mean supernatural. You just know that people who live in the countryside are a bit weird. It's kind of that sort of a story. I know a bit more about the story than that already, so I'm a bit compromised when I talk about this. But it's really good. Chris Doherty's art's really good, and it's really suited to one of these stories that's mainly about people talking to each other and how people interact with each other. But the way Andrew's broken up the story, where some of it is being told in kind of in flashback, what he's done is he's taken a story which up to a certain point is quite straightforward, and he's just made it interesting and kept you involved. The dialogue between him and his best friend, and actually between him and his girlfriend as well, is really, really good. Everyone has a very distinct voice, and the relationships are all quite believable. His girlfriend's a psychiatrist, and so there's a lot of tension and conflict there. And it's fascinating. I don't know if he said how long it's going to be eventually, but the first issue is great. It's really, really good. So if you get a chance to pick it up from him at a convention or to buy it off his site when it's available, which should be soon, do. It's good. I think it's really good.
Cool.
And I'm hoping to write a proper review about it on the site, but it's difficult because I don't have it in front of me to go into too much detail about it. I also bought Dial H, which I really enjoyed. Mm. I bought Exo Manowar because it had a nice cover, and a man in the shop. It was one of those situations where one of the other customers very kindly recommended a book to me in such a way that when I was then stood up next to the book next to him, I kind of felt like, well, I have to pick it up. And then I kind of looked at it and I thought, well, it's $3.50. I might not. This isn't really about the comic. This is more about my social anxiety. But I ended up buying it, even though I don't really know the Exo Manowar brand. I know it's an old Valiant thing, and I think there was maybe a video game or toys or something. But Valiant or Valiant. You're English. How do you say
that? I'd call it Valiant.
Valiant. Appear to be making a bit of a comeback. Yeah. So, or they're trying to anyway, so that's good.
Don't call it a comeback. They've been here for years.
It looks good, though.
Resurrection.
Two of the artists on it are Carrie Nord and Stefano Guidiano, who I know from other stuff and who are really good.
I suspect if you read it, Jane, it would knock you out.
The Resurrections are only if you're a little bit dead.
Yes.
Have you read 2000 AD yet, James?
Judge Dredd story. I haven't read anything.
Is that all?
Else.
Okay. Yeah. Mm. 2000 AD is just fucking amazing at the moment. Yeah. I know that I've talked to a couple of people. I'm kind of, although I like Steve Yowell, I'm not massively blown away by the Cadet Anderson story. But the main reason I think that is that. It feels like it's just a Judge Anderson, like a Cadet Anderson story, rather than actually moving anything along. Whereas elsewhere in the book, crazy stuff's happening.
There's not room for two Mega City One stories at the moment.
No, definitely not. Age of the Wolf 2 drew to a close this issue. It's really pretty. It didn't wow me as much as the first arc did. Zorcer of Zilk, the art is just getting better and better in it, and the story's getting weirder and a little bit darker.
It's potty, isn't it?
It's dividing people, I believe, but I'm really enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it just fine, yeah.
And I'm enjoying Flesh more than I have in ages. It's quite, there's a conspiracy going on that's getting quite
intriguing. Oh, I see Gorehead still going.
You hate Gorehead. But.
And there's a Droid Life cartoon, which is always good news.
I don't tend to read them.
Do you know, Droid Life's lovely, you should read the strip, they're good.
But Judge Dredd, Day of Chaos, Eve of Destruction, it's part 17. Mm. Still written by John Wagner, although I don't think all of it's been written by John Wagner.
No,
last issue, the Dark Judges, it looked like they were coming back. This story's pretty much broken across the internet now, and there's a Henry Flint cover of the Dark Judges, minus Judge Death. It's a huge deal for fans of Judge Dredd and for fans of 2000 AD. I was a bit worried, as excited as I was getting about it, I was a bit worried that the story couldn't really be as good. Yeah. But they're still easing into the Dark Judges, but it's really nice.
Yeah.
And Colin McNeil, who's an old classic artist on 2000 AD, I haven't seen his work in a really long time. It looks... He's broken out a new style that I guess has something to do with how easy it is to get really bold lines with computer inking or something. But it's just gorgeous, really bold, really clear. Sometimes it looks like, I don't know, sometimes it looks like Kevin Nolan, who I really like. And it's just amazing. Really, really good. I'm loving 2000 AD. Have you read Amazing Spider-Man yet, James?
No.
Number 685, Ends of the Earth, $3.99 by Dan Slott, Humberto Ramos, and Olazabra and Delgado. All of my books were in their bags at the moment, so I'm not going to go in and find the first names out. That's just disrespectful of me, isn't it? But I'm not going to. Continuation of the Ends of the Earth story. You haven't read it yet, so I'm not going to go into too much detail. But... This story's fucking huge. This is how you do an event, like an epic story. It's continuing to be really good. You've been really enjoying it so far, haven't you,
Jane? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The stakes keep getting higher. I'm very excited about what's going to happen next. I finished this one and really wanted... And that never happens anymore, really. But I finished this one and really, really wanted to know what happens next. And what's interesting is it's happening at the same time as a couple of other events. I've worked out how you handle continuity. We'll maybe talk about this a little bit more later on. But in this case, the way you handle events that have crossover elements to them that exist in a shared universe is you put enough of the story in one book and you make that story good enough and that comic good enough that it doesn't matter so much if it doesn't make sense with all the other stuff. Especially in the Marvel Universe, or I guess in the DC Universe, the way you handle the fact that, like, well, the Avengers have turned up in this story and they've been taken out of action. The way you handle the fact that Spider-Man is off on his own, well, with Silver Sable and the Black Widow, but the way you handle the fact that he's off and the whole world wants to stop him because Dr. Octopus has conned them into thinking he's on the side of the angels and that Spider-Man's a baddie. Is you just say, well, the reason the Fantastic Four and the X-Men are out on in this is because they're off-world.
Yeah.
You don't have to explain where they are. It doesn't matter if they aren't off-world in their current books, because if this book's engaging enough, people are going to read it. If you don't have to go off to other books to find out what's happening, it's all good. It's all gravy. And this story is fucking ace. It really is good. And I don't know what's going to happen next. I'm very confused because it's one of those situations where the cliffhangers are actually, like, the stakes are high enough that you aren't entirely sure how the writer's going to get out of them. I read the Manhattan Projects number 2, which I think there was some sort of snafu with, and not everyone got it last week, and I certainly didn't, but I got a copy of it this week. A Manhattan Project by John Hickman and... Was it... The artist is the same artist who was on Red Wing, Nick Pitara, and with Rachel or Rachel Rosenberg on colours. Continuing the story, continuing the alternate history story of the research and development that was going on at the end of World War II, with alternate versions of Oppenheimer and Einstein.
Einstein's awesome in this.
Yeah.
He's awesome in real life, but I mean, he's...
He's very different from how I imagine him.
a little, yeah.
It's this second issue didn't have quite the kick you in the teeth like novelty of the first one, where you literally didn't know what you were reading and it was very self-contained. It felt like the first issue was, but it's really, really good. The art's beautiful. The colour palette's just great.
It's a ton of fun, huh?
Really, really good. I bought Epic Kill from Image. By Raphael Ionco. There are some really nice bits of art in it. You're going to talk about this, aren't you?
I will do it.
I'm not going to tell you not to buy Epic Kill. I'm just going to tell you that there are other books and stories and stuff that it lifts from, that it is heavily influenced by, that probably do a slightly more consistent, more solid job. Than it. Some of the art's a little bit wooden. Some of the acting in the art's very pretty until the characters start doing stuff, and then it's a bit wooden. Animal Man, written by Jeff Lemire with Steve Pugh on art. Number 9. It's $2.99. It's still a DC Comics New 52 book. I'm doing loads this week. Loads of stuff.
That's fine.
Jeff Lemire's done a brilliant thing in this, where it's not even really a New 52 story. It's really, really cheeky. At the beginning of it, he makes such a loaded reference to the Grant Morrison run on it that he's pretty much saying this is as much a part of that continuity as the story immediately following Grant Morrison's run was. The end of the Grant Morrison run, something really dynamic happens and it's really crazy happens and then everything kind of changes. This isn't part of a new continuity at DC. This is still part of that same old continuity. That's kind of what Jeff Lemire is doing. It's aided by the fact that Steve Pugh's on art now, and as much as I like Trevor Foreman, Steve Pugh did a classic run on Animal Man. His art's amazing, so it's good. It's really good.
Seems to be coming out all the time.
Daredevil's is it double shipping? Is it coming out twice a month?
The second week in a row, isn't it? It's been out.
But
it's good though. It means the trades come out quicker.
It's really good, and I really, really like the cover. I haven't read it yet though.
Mark Waid, Chris Samnee. It's okay because it's a difficult story to. It's a difficult story to spoil anyway. It's basically he's been being pursued by the district attorney. Who keeps teasing him that, like, she knows he's Daredevil. And then now, this issue is them on a date. So it's issue 12. It's still $2.99. Mark Waid writing, as well as he has been writing the whole way through this story. Actually, though, this is the cutest issue I've read so far. Chris Samney's art, I absolutely love him anyway. He did a killer run on Thor the Mighty Avenger. But this is a really human story. It's basically he's on a date with this woman, and at the same time, you get to know about his relationship with Foggy Nelson. It's really good. It's so good. There isn't much superheroics in it, but it's great. And finally, after all that time, there's a one-shot coming out from, having said what I said about crossovers earlier on, there's a one-shot that ties into a Journey into Mystery New Mutants crossover called Exiled. I think this is going to be a five. It says Exiled 1 of 5, but then it says it's a one shot. I think this is going to be. This is the first issue in a 5-part crossover. So I might have to buy a couple of issues of New Mutants, because I get the feeling the way they're going to do this is really, like, rigidly going through each of the parts. Written by Kieran Gillen with Dan Abner and Andy Lanning, with art by. Let's get this out of its bag. That's how I say bag now. Bag.
That's good. I like the way you've added a little twist of your own to the word, which is
bag.
You've made it your own.
It's out of the bag with the board.
Not so keen on the board.
No, I don't like that very much. I overstretched myself on that, didn't I? Art by Carmine Di Giandomenico.
We are fucking awesome with those.
We are. No, we're really good. We're very multicultural in this room.
Very. Especially me.
Got Winchester Cockney,
Mock me,
half Italian, half awesome, all the way Greek Cypriot.
Yeah,
I don't know how I'd feel about this book if I hadn't only recently stopped reading the New Mutants, and if I wasn't super fond of the New Mutants anyway, because I really do love them. One of the New Mutants does have a connection to Asgard as well. She's a Valkyrie. So that's Danny Moonstar. So it kind of makes sense that she'd be crossing over into the wonderful. This story would be crossing over into the wonderful Journey into Mystery. And it's kind of a fun story as well. There's a really snappy sort of youthfulness to it. There is a huge info dump. The front page gives you a brief sense of who the New Mutants you need to worry about and who the Journey into Mystery characters are you need to worry about. And then there's a huge info dump on the first two or three, well, the first two pages that basically gets you up to speed on what's been happening in the Thor universe in the last couple of years. It covers the end of Siege and what's been going on in Journey into Mystery, which is very handy in this because this is steeped in Asgardian stuff. But the story also contains a bunch of elements that. It feels like it's mainly a Journey into Mystery book that happens to have the New Mutants in.
Yeah.
The little puppies that were in that story. Do you remember if the Christmas episode of Journey into Mystery that I probably talked about, where Loki ended up with a bunch of little demonic puppies that he had to try and get rid of?
I'm going
to
say no.
You don't remember? Well, it was just lovely. And they are in this quite a lot. Okay. Basically, something happens that... it's quite a twisty story, but something happens that basically ends up with the New Mutants, the terrifying Disea, who were in the Siege storyline and then in Journey into Mystery afterwards, who are like, they feed on the Asgardian dead. And Hela and Mephisto and basically all of the players across Journey into Mystery and New Mutants all end up on the same street where the New Mutants now live. I didn't say all that because that's a spoiler. So you didn't hear that.
Uh-oh.
It's all right. It's fine. I'll edit that out. But it's really interesting.
Edit out the spoiler, you just...
Yeah. It doesn't matter. I don't care. We freeball it on this show.
Yeah.
Now you've just referred to a spoiler that didn't actually happen.
You're talking nonsense, James.
I was just trying to make the edit hard.
Are you having a stroke?
No, I was just trying
Can you smell toast?
I'll have a stroke if you want me to. I'm close enough.
What's peculiar about this story is there's lots of mystery and intrigue and cleverness that you'd expect from Kieran Gillen and Abner and I don't know how they split up the writing chores, but Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning are perfectly good at this, at handling all of these different characters. But you kind of think that all of the mystery that was building in this story plays out, and then on the last page there's more. So it's quite, there's another element introduced. So it's really good. I think I'm going to enjoy this crossover, but so, because basically I love Loki. I could read a few comics a month with
plenty
him.
Plenty of mystery?
Plenty. You could say...
Journey?
That
journey?
I was journeying into the mystery by reading
Wicked.
It. Sorry that took a while. But, you know, there were loads of comics this week. It was a huge week.
I've gone home, so...
You haven't. You're right there. You really are having a bit of a stroke.
I am. Shall we talk about this first?
Yeah, let's talk about that first.
As you were very nicely didn't. I only picked up one that there was loads of new stuff on the shelf this week. It looked very exciting. But this one in particular leapt out at me, which is an Image book. And it is a very thick Image book as well.
It feels like Saga did.
$2.99. It's a big, thick one, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's written by Jim McCann. Art and covers by Rodin Esquero, who did the covers but not interiors for Morning Glories.
That's where I recognise the art from.
Yes. And Sonia Obrak as well.
Is she a colour artist or...?
No, she's done...
Actually part of the
art. It's art and covers by the pair of them.
Because there's an alternative cover.
There is.
We both chose the same cover, lovely lady cover. The other cover was pretty, but this was striking. It's what got me reading it.
And it's Mind the Gap, which is a whodunit. Mm-hmm. Essentially, the book eventually starts. We find that our main character is a young lady who is in a coma.
Mm.
And much happens around her bed. Melodrama basically plays out around her with her family and friends introducing themselves to the reader, essentially, so we get to find out the characters. But there's a supernatural or a kind of quasi-supernatural element to the story, in so much as she is loose within her own head.
Mm.
All of which kind of is very weird. It's not entirely clear how much that's going to tie into the murder mystery, which is clearly there's lots of breadcrumbs being left by the writer in terms of the because she's in a coma. It's not a spoiler. It happens very early that it's an attempted murder that leaves.
Well, we find out very early that
Whether
or not it's an attempted murder, I'm not sure, but she's attacked. That's what we know at this point, I think, isn't it? By someone.
It's pretty clear, isn't it? Because you have a couple of characters talking on the telephone, and it's quite clear. And this is in the first couple of pages.
Yeah.
It's kind of quite clear that guy was sent the doer in.
Oh, was that? I wasn't sure. Yeah. I kind of wasn't sure if that was it or if he was after something else. But yeah, no, that's cool.
I'm pretty sure. But
The character in question, there is a hooded
figure.
Which is always good in a mystery.
Scarlet Witch.
She could be the Scarlet Witch.
The elements you're talking about, the supernatural elements you're talking about, are interesting in that it's unclear whether or not they are actual or they are her head.
Yeah.
Or if it's just her or if there is other stuff going on, isn't it? One of the characters tells you stuff, but you're not entirely sure as a reader what's going on.
Is that a manifestation of her own imagination or not? Reminded me of James Dean for some reason, I don't know why.
The porn star.
Yes. No. It's
very popular.
True. A lot happens in this first issue. I don't want to talk too much about the story because it is an opening chapter of a story. We're introduced to an awful lot of characters to the point where I had trouble a couple of times keeping up with who'd been introduced, what's their relationship to the central character. But it's basically setting up that each one of them, I think, potentially could have had something to do.
Or is involved in the wider mystery. Yeah.
It's fascinating. You have all of that going on, and then this parallel story being told in her imagination, we're kind of led to believe.
And there's a lot more... we're given an insight into a wider conspiracy.
Yeah.
There's what looks like it could just be political...
Yeah.
like political infighting within the hospital, or it could tie closer into the story. It's because she's from a like a privileged background, isn't she? So that probably it's interesting because it isn't. Although we've seen his art before, we've seen their art before. Yeah. It isn't quite like any of the books I'm reading at the moment, which I kind of love it for a little bit.
It's a really curious book, in so much as I wasn't quite sure what to expect when I picked it up, and I was amazed. I will probably reread this weekend. Yeah. And I don't often reread my comic books the week I get them, but especially you get to the, there's some lovely back matter.
I haven't read the back matter.
Where they actually suggest that you might want to go back and check for clues that they've left. Yeah.
So they're obviously aiming for that sort of...
Yeah. Which I remember shrieking at you going, I read too many fucking comic books for one that's going to leave subtle clues the whole way along. I need things to be a little bit more obvious than that. But it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous looking book. It has a very, very clean style of art. But the colour palette's beautiful. And there's a lot of effect work as well, isn't there?
But it's never overused. It's really nice.
That makes the pages really vibrant, really stand out. There are a couple of splash pages, but again, they aren't overused. It's all played very subtly. It is a really intriguing, really lovely, thick comic book.
It's a lovely production, really lovely looking production.
I mean, read properly, this is probably a half an hour of your time, which is that's quite unusual for a comic book to be such a chunky read, I think.
I did really like it, and I'm really intrigued by it. The writing, it didn't like set me alight because it isn't the sort of art I normally like, and the writing was quite functional for the most part. But like I said, it's not like anything else I'm reading. I couldn't work out if I really liked or if I started to get annoyed with the attention to pop culture in it.
Well, a lot of that happens early on. I thought it was going to irritate me greatly.
Yeah, I think that's it. I wasn't sure whether it's actually textual or if it's like... I wasn't sure if it's going to be partly a story where music is an element to it, or if he was doing a Quentin Tarantino, and like if it's texture rather than... Do you know? But I think it's interesting.
Yeah, it's not entirely clear. But as you feel your way into the book, it becomes less jarring. But yeah, the first four or five pages, I really wasn't sure whether I was going to like it or not. By the time I finished it, I was desperate to read it again and read the next issue, which is they turn me around, man. They turn me around.
I think it made me really want to listen to a song.
Want to listen to Dark Side of the Moon.
That's it. There's an extended bit about that that I really, really liked.
So. Talking about time signatures in money,
which
is fascinating. Very good. Highly recommended.
Excellent. What else?
Next up at somewhat thinner tome, at $3.99, is round three of A versus X. It's heralded on the front cover that this is Captain America and Wolverine going at it.
Really?
Hope Summers has done a runner. After the Avengers confronted the X-Men trying to get hold of her, because, of course, the Phoenix is on its way back. Wolverine at the front. We've got this very handy, a bit like the Journey in the Mystery crossover that you were talking about earlier. We've got a very handy guide showing us who the main players in the Avengers are, who the main players in the X-Men are, that are going to be important in this story, because there's a number of Avengers off in space. They're off world at the moment.
They're actually off in space. That's good.
With Wolverine sat in the middle.
It's really odd, old pictures of a lot of the characters.
Yeah, some of it's very strange. It's a bit weird. Basically, this is Captain America gives assignments to the Avengers, so breaks them down into different teams after it's clear that Scott Summers has actually pulled the wool over the Avengers' eyes, very cleverly escaped to go after Hope themselves. Cap splits the teams up, but keeps Wolverine very close to his side, which leads to a confrontation.
Did you... Sorry, go on.
I was about to answer your question. You can
did
ask
you enjoy
question.
It more than you have liked the previous issues?
I enjoyed it much more than I've enjoyed the previous issues. It's becoming a much richer tale now. I think the fact that there's some conflict, some kind of felt more meaningful, the conflict between Captain America and Wolverine.
Have they changed up the creative teams?
This is what's quite interesting about it. The writer changes on each. So I think it's been table written by Jason Aaron, Brian Michael Bendis, Ed Brubaker, Matt Fraction, and Jonathan Hickman. So far, we've had Aaron, Bendis, and Brubaker scripts for the first three. So I'm assuming we've got Fraction and Hickman scripts to come in the next couple of books. But it sounds like the whole event has been worked on in the bullpen. So yeah, much better. Actually, I enjoyed it much more. AR. Still no.
Have you used it?
Yeah, I used it on this last one. I wasn't massively impressed, frankly. It's
what happens?
There's kind of there's a couple of pages where you get art breakdowns. There's a trailer on the front cover, and the final AR is a doctor explaining what would have happened to a certain character were they to have really experienced the events in that part of the book. I can't really tell you any more than that. Okay. Spoil the end of the book if you're buying it this week. Last one I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to talk about this book every time it comes out for the next 6 months, is The Boys.
Still got 6 months?
5 months.
Oh.
There are five more left after this. This is the final arc. And it feels like beginning of a wrap-up. There's a bit of action that isn't really explained. I don't think why Butcher's doing what he's doing, unless I need to go back and reread something from much earlier on in the series. But essentially, the rest of the book is really the main characters of the boys. So Mother's Milk, Huey, Frenchie, and the female. Not so much the female talking. Discussing what next, basically. Which could be really, really boring, but really, really isn't. And Huey actually goes on a really interesting journey in this story. And actually, you end up feeling quite bad for wee Huey by the end of this.
I feel really bad for him from the beginning. That's why I struggle to read any further on than the first three or four books.
Can I be honest about wee Huey? There have been times when he's been the most irritating prick in the universe in The Boys. But no, I felt really bad for him by the end of it. It's lovely. I'm just going to talk about it because it means that I will read it on a Wednesday night. And so you're going to have to listen to me talking about The Boys.
I love listening to you talk about The Boys.
But it's like a beautiful character pieces written by... I think when Ennis really knows his characters, really likes them, really gives a shit about what he's doing, the voices just feel so authentic and so real. You know, you don't hear the writer's voice, you hear the characters. And they kind of they leap off the page and they sort of breathe in the book. But they have a life of their own. And I think this is what Ennis has done in The Boys. The characters he's created in The Boys are real, if you know what I mean. It's lovely.
Oh, you love The Boys.
I do love the boys. Yeah, very, very much indeed.
Monkeys, Monkey with a Podcast. They do stuff on the internet and it's almost good. They talk about comics and stuff, and James masturbates a lot. Hi, monkeys, it's Mike Draws here, and I am here to ask, nay, plead, for some goddamn faces. For issue 5 of Elemental Micah, I've finished the first draft of issue 5 of Elemental Micah, and there are quite a few crowd scenes in there, and I was wondering if some of your lovely, lovely listeners would like to lend their faces to the crowd scenes. So basically what I'm asking is if you would like to actually feature your lovely mushes in an actual proper printed, lovely, papery book in, you know, glorious grayscale, because grayscale is the new colour these days. It's very cool, you know, the stuff. And yeah, feel free to email me with pictures of your face and let me know who you are, because, you know, pictures of faces, that's nice, but, you know, it's nice to put a name to the face, and what the hell, I'll put your name in the comic as well as a contributor of sorts. Feel free to email me at etch@micdraws.co.uk. So far, I've got quite a few people. I've got Craig Lines, who is an author, a proper author, no pictures or anything. Ashley Collins, who is a talented Flash illustrator who draws weird shit. Rob Curitan, who does awful comics. Donna McCrary, oh, I wish I could say that properly. She is lovely with pink hair and gorgeous and looks wicked in a Power Girl outfit. David Paul Shirley, who does Fira, another comic with an con artist. Convention artist. Graham Johnson, who you might have heard of, I don't know. He's all right. He does a sort of an okay comic, I suppose. Some woman called Melanie Georgiou. I don't know who she is. I think she's a relative of some sort. I don't know. And also, apparently, these four names have appeared. Jane, John, Nick and James. I don't know who they are. But yeah, they've submitted their names. They've not submitted any photos yet. You know, guys, I know what you look like, but, you know, I'm a bit of a dirt brain, so, you know, send me photos of your lovely mushes and, you know, get in the comic, and then, you know, you can have a bit of a jig in the pub and, you know, well that's a spoiler. Yeah, you might be in a pub. And, yeah, guys, send me your faces. Send me, you know, just so I can have an idea of what you look like, the shape of your face, your eyes, your nose. I don't know if you can take a picture of your front and the side of your face, just so I could get the shapes right. And yeah, as I said before, email me at etch@micdraws.co.uk, and yeah, that would just be a wicked thing to have your face in a comic. Wicked. Doing the thumbs up, you can't see that. But, you know, the spirit is there of the thumbs aloft, a la Paul McCartney. I'm rambling now. I'm going to go. You're all lovely people. I love you. Yeah, you know, I mean, the podcast is okay, but you guys are great. Take care. Have a lovely bar mitzvah. And, oh, hang on. Phone's locked. Hang on. I need to press stop. Yeah, wicked. Bye.
Should we talk about Free Comic Book Day?
This Saturday is Free Comic Book Day.
What date is it though, James?
It's May.
It's the 5th of May.
May the 5th be with you.
Ah.
And what are we going to do? Are we going to do anything for it?
Don't think so. No. Yes.
Okay.
What are we going to do?
We're going to go down to our local Forbidden Planet and we're going to do some podcasting from there and we're going to read some books.
That's Forbidden Planet, Southampton.
Hampshire.
In Southampton's glamorous Hanover buildings.
Yes.
Which is encased in a rich velvety cloth of scaffolding.
Yes. Horrible,
isn't it? I noticed the Bright House sign is really, really big. Sorry. Because they've put their own sort of banner signs over the scaffolding so you can't see the signs of the shop. Bright House one is, I think it's actually bigger than their actual sign. Yeah. So.
What's Bright House?
It's where you buy things on tick.
Oh, okay. Mm. So it's a sign of the times, is
the
what it is.
Depressing sign of the times. It's
and that and sex shops in the city centre.
There've always been sex shops in the city centre.
Not that close to
They're
the city centre.
Though.
No, not Anne Summers. I mean, the wood panelling and stuff like that.
All owned by the same dude.
Hmm?
All owned by the same dude, but I'm not going to have this conversation on the pod.
He shouldn't be able to afford all of the ones in town. Never mind, anyway. So yes, next to the Bryant House sign, Forbidden Planet Southampton in Southampton. We are going to be there. As James said, we are going to be recording bits during the day.
Yes.
We're not going to have an actual live bit, but we might be talking to people, which would be nice.
We'll read stuff, review it. Hopefully talk to people and stuff, and we'll see.
So if you are in the Southampton area, come on down to Free Comic Book Day down there. They're giving away lots of free comics as well, so that's good. There's some awesome stuff. Of the stuff that's going to be available, of the stuff that's going to be given away. And this isn't just at Forbidden Planet, this is like most comic shops everywhere.
Yep. Check the internet for your local participating comic book shop.
Yes. It's amazing. I was talking to someone today. They started it when I was still working in a comic shop like 10 or something years ago, but it's just become a proper thing now.
Yeah.
You can't get the comic industry to come together on anything else. But all of the publishers do something for this, I think, pretty much. Any particular highlights that you guys are excited about reading?
I will tell you when you give me the sheet of paper so I can remind myself.
Do you want to see the sheet of paper?
It's mostly Boom Studio stuff for me. So there's Dune Origins coming out, which I'm intrigued for. I'm a big fan of Dune. And then some of the All Ages titles I think I'm looking forward to. So Peanuts Adventure Time Flipbook. Sounds like I need to snag that for my daughter. And what else? I'm sure there was something else on here that I wanted to have a look at. No. Yeah, well, there is. But those are the two, I think. Yeah, so the Peanuts and I think June I'm particularly intrigued.
Something to do with Terry and June.
No. Oh, that's something else we need to talk about in the difficult middle bit that we haven't addressed yet.
I think I'm going to be... I'm looking forward to looking at all of them, but Moomin Colour Special, I think that's the one thing I'm going to be looking forward to the most.
I can't actually remember what I wanted to do. There's loads and loads... Oh, yeah, yeah. There's going to be a Judge Dredd special, 2000 AD Judge Dredd special, which I'm really, like, interested in. I want to see what that is, because everything... Oh, I think they've actually advertised it on the back of one of the comics. It looks like it's going to be amazing. We talked about it last week, didn't we? So that's that. That's this Saturday.
Yes, so come down and see us if you're about.
Yes. James, what was it you think we need to address?
You mentioned Terry and June. And for 132 episodes, we sounded very much like Terry and June. You will have noticed if you listened last week or this week, we sound a bit different at the front. It's because we've got a lovely, shiny new theme tune.
Yes.
That was very kindly written for us by life partner Steve.
Yep.
Yes.
So thank you very much, Steve. You can buy it as an exclusive MP3 for £10. Email me to my private account. I will let you have it for free.
As if anyone would give him a private account.
No.
We didn't address it on the show, but it has been in the show notes.
Yes.
So that's okay.
I thought we should say thank you to Steve.
No, definitely. Thank you, Steve.
Thank
you, Steve.
Rock.
It's awesome.
And
it's really nice.
You guys should tell him on Twitter that if you like it, you should tell him.
Yes. You should.
Yes. Thank you for endorsing that message. Nick, did you ask anyone anything this week?
Oh, okay, that wasn't the notes I had in front of me, but never mind, that's okay. Yes, this week
I asked
the internet at large because everyone was very kind last week.
So we thought we'd milk that kindness
a little bit. I think we've already tied them out a little bit. But I just wanted to know, because it comes up every other week in comics, but I wanted to know what continuity actually means to people.
You almost dropped the golden rule with
didn't.
The word we're not allowed to say there.
Shut up. Why is he being so annoying?
I don't know. Should we just ignore him?
Yes. But yeah, we just asked everyone what continuity actually means to them. And we suggested they could interpret that question any way they wanted. They didn't have to, like, necessarily talk about comics. Cause...
I interpret it into Hungarian and I didn't understand it at all.
You should phone up an interpreter then.
So the aforementioned Steve did actually send us an email. This one got much longer answers from people than the last one. But that's good. So Steve said, continuity is a dangerous term in geek parlance where it isn't necessarily in other places. Continuity wants consistency, which can apply to anything, from making sure an actor wears the same tie through scenes in a movie, to a business providing a solid standard of service to its customers, and the sort of stability a comic book or genre piece should have is that it's... I like the word genre.
Mm.
should have is that its universe abides by its own rules and its characters' traits do not lurch without the story providing just cause. What it doesn't necessarily have to deliver is linearity, by which I mean an obsessive attention to details or plot points that are meant to ripple forward in perpetuity. It's exciting for committed readers to be rewarded for their loyalty with nods and winks along the way. What isn't so exciting is if a major scene has its meaning impacted if the reader hasn't read an issue or trade from days gone by, and the item they're reading now doesn't assist them. I'm reading quite quickly, so shall I just read all of them? Because it's easier than picking
it's
out
highlights. It's entirely up to you. Let your conscience decide, Nick.
Thank you, James. Someone reading the fifth Harry Potter book has likely read the previous four, but that assumption doesn't scale to someone reading issue 438 of Astounding Supergent.
Good book.
What do Marvel say, James?
Every comic book could potentially be someone's first.
Yes, it's interesting that they say that, though. Mm. It's not something they slavishly stick to.
No, but necessarily. You know, they stick closer to it than many.
He finishes, when continuity becomes fan service, it represents the grimmer, more self-serving parts of the relationship between creator and consumer, patting each other on the back and creating a tighter and tighter circle which newcomers or more casual participants cannot and perhaps do not want to join. I might put these in the comments to this post as well, mm-hmm. just so yeah. that people can see the whole thing. Rick Vance, who have we spoken to Rick before? Yep. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Rick.
I don't know who he is. Maybe.
Thanks for putting our memories on the spot.
He's an international superstar. No.
Continuity to me is like salad dressing or gravy. Sure, it tastes delicious, but the point of it is not to overwhelm the meal, only to add more flavour to the dish. Likewise, if that is the only thing on the plate, it is not very appetising. Timothy Swan says, we know Timothy Swan. We haven't heard his voice in ages.
He's busy doing a thousand and one
on his podcast. I hear his voice coming from the bathroom all the time. Mm.
That's a bit weird.
It's not weird.
Him and life partner Steve have got this thing going on.
Continuity is important where it's a stated aim of the universe. He sounds cleverer when he talks.
He's clever, don't he?
Okay. And where it enhances storytelling by creating a rich history and background. Continuity is problematic where it proves a bar to new readers and only leads to noodling about rather than telling stories that build on older stories.
You should let me, the more clever ones you should let me read out. I will make them sound dumb in no time.
Yes. And Peter Hammerson wrote us quite a nice long email. I won't read out the whole of this. He starts quite dramatically. I'm going to do a dramatic version of it. I'm not going to. It can be a source of joy, but with a terrible dark side. I mainly read mainstream superhero books, so continuity is a big part of my relationship with the hobby. It's worth noting, as an aside to the listener, it is largely an issue in mainstream comics rather than elsewhere. And he talks a lot about his relationship. I will share this one online rather than read the whole thing out. But one thing he does point out is that when the continuity stuff started to get in the way of the story, he almost fell out of collecting comics altogether, which I think is what happens. Mm. It happens to people when they feel a major point in continuity really fucks with them as a reader in a way that they're not that happy with. But if they feel they're being exploited into buying more stuff than they really want to, sometimes people just stop altogether. It happens quite a lot. Although he does consider he's recovering from his continuity obsession, which is good. Excellent. That's good to know. Overall, comic book stories can be a rewarding puzzle. Backstory can be a rewarding puzzle to unlock for readers, but too much of it becomes a hindrance. When readers complain that a new story somehow ruins an old one because it retcons changes, they are taking it too far. Not only do they damage the hobby if too much attention is given to them by the publishers, but they spoil their own experience of reading and enjoying stories. I think he means the readers spoil their own experience of reading. He also asked some people, I asked people to ask their friends who don't read comics what they think. So he did a quick poll. One person said, continuity means getting everything right and having it all make sense. Yes, but that's like as big a deal in TV. That kind of falls apart in a lot of TV shows and other stuff as well. You'll sometimes watch a movie and it just won't make sense across. There'll be things that don't make sense across its hour and a half. So, hour and a half.
Yeah, they're good old days.
It's usually a thread of timeline events, and this is why I was kind of interested with the word continuity, because it can mean different things. And another one very literally said, it's the announcers between programs who say what's coming up next and later. That is, strictly speaking, what it means. And he's enjoying the podcast and loves the new theme, although he does miss the old, although he will miss the old one, maybe bring it back for special occasions.
Aww.
Which is nice.
Well, we've got Jubilee coming up.
So yeah, yeah, so, and it seems aptly British. There was another one you read.
Yeah, cheers.
Are you sitting on your phone?
I don't know what I've done with my phone now. I think I might have sat on it and I've absorbed it. It was under a fold of fat.
Nice.
It wasn't. It was just resting quietly on your leg.
Okay. Let me
think. What were you going to say while you're looking for that?
I was thinking about continuity. And I like to say it doesn't bother me at all, but I have one major blind spot. It's stories involving Jason Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's when a story is really particularly impactful, and when it's something you've held really dear. And I know I've rattled on incessantly about how much I love Death in the Family, but that comic had such a profound effect on me that I can't handle seeing him back in the DC universe. I can't read stories.
It hit you at a formative point, though, didn't it?
It did, yeah. And especially like the way the characters developed. You know, I generally don't care. I don't hold any continuity that bit apart from that. Jason Todd needs to be the misunderstood dead youth, not the British arsehole.
Yeah. I think a lot of people feel that way about Gwen Stacy. There was a point in history when it didn't happen very often that comic characters died. Jason Todd was possibly the end of that period where it was still notable.
Yeah.
Probably actually was the close brackets on the point when it was still notable, because that was the point when a comic, they didn't just make a selling point of sticking it on the cover like the whole thing was about whether or not he'd die, wasn't it? So, but Gwen Stacy is one. Jean Grey, a lot of people never got over the first time, so luckily she came back before she died again.
Batman comic readers of the late 80s are just as culpable as the Joker.
Yeah.
Chris Duncan. Chris Duncan from Blast Shields Down.
Oh, yes.
In my humble opinion, continuity is one, a definitive chronology.
Can I read it, do you think? Can I read it off your phone?
I don't know why I've
Is a definitive chronology or ordering, end ordering of events. First this happens, then that, and finally this other thing. But two, just as importantly, later events in sequence should never, ideally, yeah, I know, contradict earlier events. That's it. That's fine. That's simple enough. I think he's right there as well. None of the people were wrong, necessarily. Mm. He would have said that in a much cooler American voice, though. I love those guys. Blast Shields Down guys. Yeah. I love listening to them.
It's a lovely, It's a good, great, super smashing, marvellous.
You should talk about your Kickstarter thing, Nick.
Oh, yeah, the Kickstarter thing.
We've gone to talk about it twice now.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you for answering the question. We will ask another question this week. James has one that he's been eager to ask.
No, maybe, but then I'm not going to be here for the next 2 weeks, so I don't want to ask my question.
Ask your question.
Okay, we'll come up with something
else. No, I'm not going to be here.
Ask your question.
He wants to discuss discuss the outcome, don't you?
Mm.
He's such an ego.
You're not having my question. I won't be here for 2 weeks. I mean, the podcast will probably take a nosedive, admittedly.
We'll do a poll next week.
What, live on the show?
Yeah.
Pole dancing? No, I don't understand. I don't want a pole dance.
Who's pole dancing? No one's pole dancing. Okay, dance me now.
I'm not sure what's happening, Jane. She just told me to dance for her. You're not going to stop me.
I'm really looking forward to listening to next week. There's
no pole here, but I do have a chair. I can probably do some amazing things with it. Oh, I saw Avengers. That was good. I should have mentioned that.
Nick, what did you do with your week? Bye-bye!
Okay, today, not long before, actually, in the afternoon, I think it was, somebody posted about a Kickstarter that I'm quite excited about. It's called The Smut Peddler. It's a... apparently, there was a series a few years ago, an indie or small press series... of an anthology book. It ran for 3 issues, called The Smut Peddler, 3 black and white issues with stories in it by lots of creators, but of the list, the ones I recognised were Jess Fink, Spike, Carla Speed McNeil, Erica Moan, and Tom Belland. Now, James.
What?
You made a funny noise.
I did.
And those, specifically Jess Fink, Carla Speed McNeil, and Erica Moan, are people who, like, who I just adore. I love their stuff. Okay. This comic, which I hadn't heard of till today, actually, basically featured erotic stories, but with a very female-friendly approach. Basically filth, basically smut.
Lovely.
Something that Jess Fink and Erica Moan are really good at, and I'd love to see Carla Speed McNeil's art on something like that, because she's amazing. But this is going to be a 350-page book. It's reprinting the three issues. As I said, it's black and white, with, alongside those creators, a whole bunch of other creators. The perks are quite good, I think, but I very seldom, on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, I very seldom look beyond the point at which you can get a copy of the book.
Yeah.
And in this case, that's $30. So probably about £20 ish, for us, yeah. Maybe. But for a 350-page book, I'm up for that, frankly. You do have to pay a little bit extra to get it posted to the UK. It's like an extra $12, but I'm quite excited. Okay. So, yes, it's called The Smut Peddler. I'll post a link to it on the post for this.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be in the show notes. Definitely worth having a look. If you haven't heard of those creators, search them out, because they're really, really good. Possibly don't do it while you're at work. In some cases. And this, I think, is going to be the sort of book, and I was tweeting about it a lot today, I think it's going to be the sort of book that will probably appeal to people who don't necessarily read comics, but might be interested in female-friendly erotica, yeah. Which I suspect there are more people like that out there than people would expect. So definitely tell your friends. And then you might find out if they're into female-friendly erotica,
talking,
which is good.
Of female-friendly erotica, George Beedham.
Oh, yes.
His book, which isn't female-friendly erotica, but he is, he made his Indiegogo target. So woo! Congratulations, George.
Woo!
And I think I speak for all of us when I say, where's my book?
Woo!
Where's my book? Where's my book?
Woo!
Where's my book? Where's my book? Congratulations.
He hasn't finished it yet.
Yeah, congratulations. I'm very pleased you made your target.
Well done.
Yeah, well done, dude. Jane?
Yes.
How about you spotlight for us?
I shall.
Go ahead.
Okay. This week...
Proceed.
It's my turn to spotlight. This week I'm talking about Filthy Rich. I'm continuing my Horrible People season, which I've started...
Oh, that's true, because the other one was horrible.
Yeah, written by Brian Azzarello and art by Victor Santos. It's a really... this is one of the books I got from Forbidden Planet International. Filthy Rich, it's a vertigo book, is following a ex-American football hero called Rich, or as everyone refers to him as Junk.
Junk,
yes. His life has pretty much gone downhill since he suffered an injury, a very severe knee injury, and couldn't play anymore. And we meet him, and he's working in a car dealership. I'm not sure if it's a used car or not. I don't know if that's worse or better. I don't know.
Used cars. Well, there's used cars you're recycling.
Yeah, that's pretty useful.
It's better for the environment.
I think in the sales community, there's more prestige in selling new.
Oh.
Yeah.
But he wasn't working as a waitress in a cocktail bar.
No, he wasn't, okay. He doesn't really get on with his colleagues. He's not very good as a salesman. His boss is very much a money man. He's sort of very nice, but he is all about the money. None of the people that work there are particularly nice, and they're not very nice to him. And he does get quite a lot of crap about his past, because he was quite a big rising star, and there was a lot of scandal and speculation about some of the games that may have been fixed that he competed in. Yes, so he just isn't having a very good time. He's got a beau. She's not his girlfriend or his wife. She's his beau. That's the only way I can think of it. Called Charlene. We don't get to see Charlene very much, but we do end up feeling a bit sorry for her by the end. Like I said, Mr. Sofa is his boss and runs Sofa Car Dealership. And
that's just confusing.
I know.
Do they sell sofas or do they sell cars?
Sofa. No, Mr. Car sells the sofa.
Oh, yeah, I see. Exactly.
He knows that Junk's crap at his job and gives Junk a different task. The one thing he's good is he's big and he's got, you know, he's still quite fit and he still, you know, looks after himself. So he tasks him with looking after his very, his daughter Vicky, who is a socialite. But she keeps getting bad press. There's no such thing as bad press. There's always some scandal with her. She's always in a newspaper and, you know, he's one of the richest people in the state, so he doesn't like this. It's never really addressed, but the mother's not on the scene. I don't know if she died or went somewhere, but it feels like she perhaps passed
away. She's probably off world.
Yeah. It feels like she passed away from the one reference to her. So he's tasked with looking after Vicky. Vicky is everything you can probably think of. You could possibly expect from a rich, spoiled little brat.
Like Paris Hilton?
Yes, pretty much.
Allegedly.
He enters this world, this odd elite world of socialites. You know, they're all so fake and phony. He doesn't like it at first and kind of gets entrenched in it. He meets quite a lot of actual famous people. So not just people who are famous for being in the papers. There's one particular movie star called Sally, who takes a bit of a shine to him. But basically, he's been tasked with being her bodyguard, but she's not supposed to know that he's her bodyguard. And it turns out he's not the first. He's one of many, and she's always sort of discovered them. Vicky is very... Everyone in this book is very manipulative, Vicky being the worst. And Junk himself, he's not naive, and he allows himself to be manipulated, and he manipulates other people too. It's a very chaotic, frantic story. There is so much going on. The scene change is constant, and there's so many different stories unfolding at the same time. It's hard to keep up, but you get it at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think... It's definitely a book you need to reread once you've read it. The problem is you want to turn the page so quickly. You really want to know what happens next. So you do find yourself going, oh, right, okay, yeah. And just going back to check yourself.
Before you rate yourself.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is he in every scene? Sorry, is it from his point of view, most of it? So at least if you're being introduced to all of these characters,
yes.
Is it
It is through his eyes. And his view changes throughout the story. I don't want to give too much away because it's a brilliant book. Fine. I really enjoyed it. Every character has their own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But in most stories, that there is a selflessness to some people. But in this, again, the same with A Lot of Love. Everyone's just really horrible in this. You don't really want anyone, apart from Charlene, his poor beau.
Who's never in it.
Yeah, she's not in it very much.
I bet if you got to see her a lot, she's probably not an angel.
Maybe. But I like the way she's
probably been a puppy drowner.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
No, she cares for Junk deeply, and he just isn't... He feels... Oh, God.
Does she care for Junk deeply?
Oh, thanks, right. Thank you very much. No. Rich. His name's Rich, shall I say that? She cares for Rich deeply. Is that any better?
I don't know anymore.
No, that's fine. She cares for Rich, that's fine. You didn't say Dick, which is another shortened version of Richard. That's fine.
Right. Come on, just crash through, mate.
Thanks.
You can do it.
And he claims to, but he really doesn't. And... You know, he gets involved with Vicky, he gets involved with Sally. There's a very sinister plot point in this. And he thinks he's working the same agenda. It turns out he's just working for everyone else's. But it isn't as obvious as in A Lot of Love, but people do get their comeuppance. There's a lot of things that happen where you think, yeah, actually, you deserved that.
Yeah.
And it sort of leads at a point where you're thinking, I think what's going to happen next isn't going to be very nice. And I don't think I mind it not being very nice. really well written, proper Azzarello styles I've come to know and love. Especially with Spaceman, it's his frantic, but you get it mixed up gobbledygook world that you just dive into and you get into and you become part of it once you start reading it. Santos's art is it's gazing.
I don't understand what these young people, the way they talk at all.
It's gut, isn't it?
She probably learned it from Firefly, isn't it?
Yeah.
We had a conversation about Estuary English in the week, didn't we? I apparently don't know where that comes from. But yeah.
It's gur, which is great, amazing, and gorgeous.
Gur egg, that's gag. It's gag.
Which is why I said gur.
He's fucking God, skilled.
You're so 90s. Skilled.
I'm interested. I'm glad you say that because it's one of the Vertigo crime books, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
And one of the downsides I've found to a few of the ones I've bought was I haven't been that enamoured of the art in a lot of them, but this looks.
Yeah. He suits Azzarello's story. It's the frantic, really frantic scenes are just mind-boggling, whereas everything else, it keeps up the pace perfectly. And it's a very moody book.
Mm.
So there's a lot of scenes, and it's black and white, so there's a lot of scenes where you can't see much of the character. I mean, there is a sex scene in there, which is... Oh, Nick's eyes. Quite wide there. It's really...
I can see James's tummy as well.
Oh, yeah. It's the way the two characters engage and end up having sex. The art follows that in the way.
Now I'm not even sure what you mean. That's amazing.
The way I don't want to say frantic.
Why not?
I don't want to say quickie either.
But... Those are great words. Frantic, quickie. They go together like shamalamalamalamalamalam.
It's desperate. There's a lot of desperation in this sex scene, and the way that the panels show that is perfect. You get exactly a sense of what's going on without revealing too much, and you know exactly how these characters feel and why they're doing it and how they're going to feel afterwards. So,
is there a sense of desperation running through
all the way through the characters? A lot of the characters... Everyone in it is horrendously arrogantly confident, and when things fall apart and things happen, you get to know a couple a bit more, you realise they're nothing, they're nobodies, there's no substance to them, they've got nothing, and they've got nothing to give, and they're in a situation where they can't resolve it because they're a nobody, which is...
You said a couple of things that made me think of... Because, as I said, we've been watching Spartacus this week, but we've also been... I've talked to a couple of people about Game of Thrones, and specifically Joffrey in Game of Thrones, who is a horrible little oik.
I haven't watched Game of Thrones.
That's fine.
I'll probably watch it about 5 years' time.
The thing we were talking about was what people always say when there's a horrible character like that is, like, you see people talking on the internet and stuff saying, oh, I hate that character, I hope he dies soon, and it's kind of the opposite of what I want. If I hate a character enough, that probably means they're awesome.
Yeah.
Just not in a way that makes me love them. And the good thing about Spartacus, and it kind of happens with A Game of Thrones as well, is that thing of comeuppance.
Yeah.
You hate the characters because they're horrible, but you don't want them to die in an unsatisfactory way. You don't. You want them to get their comeuppance, but
it doesn't necessarily have to be death either. It's just something that you know, karma. I guess if you want to put it into a general term, I guess karma. You want to see them get punished for what they've done. It doesn't necessarily mean being arrested or, you know, anything like that, because that just, for what they've done, it depends on that and whether or not it's going to give you the satisfaction. So it's a great little book, part of the Vertigo crime series.
I love the way they look.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's really, really good. The cover, sorry, that is. Obviously the book as well, but the cover says it all, really.
Something's driven the dogs mental. I don't know what's going on.
The end of my spotlight, and now
it's great.
Thank you.
That was the end of it. It was great.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I just, there is so much that happens, and like I said, it's frantic. I could sit here and talk about each character, there's a lot of them, and their individual stories, but I think you should just...
How much was it?
Cheap.
No, it's good. Cheap. All of the ones I've bought yeah, discounted, cheap, and they are really nice.
And you get a lot for your money, so it's definitely worth picking up and reading it, yeah.
I'm just picking it up and reading it.
I wonder if Nick wants to borrow it.
Yes, I would love to. I really like the look of that. And there's a sex scene in it. That's always good.
There's more than one.
Awesome. My favourite sorts of sex scenes. Multiple sex scenes. That looks great. I have really enjoyed them on balance. But I do like Brian Azzarello. He hardly ever sets a foot really wrong, does he?
No. It's amazing how he can adapt his style to any story, and it's still something completely different but has all of his signature marks for it. Good.
Excellent. How can people contact us if they want to contact us and talk to us about any of the things we have talked about today, or answer any of the questions that we will ask them later, or just to be ace?
I've some suggestions.
Go on then, James.
Twitter,
you can contact us on Twitter where?
At James Momb.
At Jane Momb.
At Nick's site.
Or at John Momb, the other Momb man.
Or at Momb Comics.
At Momb Comics.
Yes, there's normally someone keeping an eye on that.
How about on Tumblr?
On Tumblr, we are Momb Cast.
Comics.
On Tumblr. We're easy enough to find. It's awesome.
Google Plus,
we are... You put me
Momb
on the spot
Comics.
Now. Momb Comics, yes.
On Fastback.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Fastback. Are you really not hearing that echo? Maybe it's my head.
Jesus fucking Christ.
There's Facebook,
no echo, man.
Facebook, we're actually quite easy. It's Momcast, I think.
Momcast. Well, it's quite easy, Momb Comics. I mean, it's got Momb. Just remember, it's Momb and Comics.
If you're following us on Twitter, I mention it from my account and the Momb Comics account.
Well, we'd be very grateful if you left a review on iTunes for us, because that's good and it means people can see us. We'd be even more grateful if it was a positive one.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
And you can subscribe at iTunes. You can also subscribe in whatever software you use to subscribe to podcasts or blogs using the RSS feed on the site.
You can also email us.
You can email us at
momcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
Lovely.
That was my favourite, my best voice that I put on to do that.
You can write a letter. Mark it Nick's site at Monkey Cave, Inner Avenue, Southampton.
Yes. Then now someone knows if they've got a dirty bomb, they know approximately how to get rid of me if they want to.
You're a dirty bomb.
You're a dirty bomb.
We have
you love dirty
we
bombs.
Recorded this in the Inner Avenue area of Southampton on many, many podcasts.
Did we mention the website? We've got a website.
Oh, yeah,
the
website where you can find out about all these other things as well.
Momcomics.com.
Momcomics.com, yes. And there are movie reviews and comic reviews and interviews and stuff going up there all the time.
Oh, games for the kids and all sorts of things to do.
We don't have any games for the kids, disclaimer.
Fun for the adults, games for the kids. It's fun for all the family. Momcomics.com.
We do not guarantee fun.
For anyone.
No, that's what I mean. We have a contribution. So thank you for that. Thank you, contributor.
Thank you, contributor.
What are you guys up to in the coming week?
Doesn't matter. I'm going away for work. I'm not going to be here for 2 weeks. I'm done.
We've got a fun-loving comic book day.
We got that. Yeah, we got that. But it doesn't matter anymore.
On Saturday, it doesn't matter anymore.
What really matters is I'm not here for the next 2 weeks. So, listener, if you don't want to bother listening for the next 2 weeks, we completely understand.
No, we're getting Ray Winston down. Yeah. It'll be fine.
He'll do a much better job.
Or, well, if we can't get Ray Winston, I'm sure I can find a potato.
An angry potato.
To do a couple of asterisk spotlights.
In it, then it'll be angry.
Yeah. Put a fork in its ass. It's Dan.
If you want it, you should have put a fork in it.
Yeah. Are you going to... That song would be a bit different if the lyrics were approximately like that.
Yeah.
What are you up to, Jane?
I am going to IKEA.
IKEA?
Canada!
To go snowbobbing and penguin surfing and reindeer riding.
At IKEA.
Oh, she's back. Yay!
And I'm going to pop some meatballs in my mouth.
Whimsical Jane's made of can return after a while. 100 podcasts.
And then I'm going to save some lives the next day by donating furniture. And well then done. I'm going to read comics all day.
I don't know if I'm going to have balls in my mouth at any point over the next few days.
Play cards rot on Saturday, mate.
It's a big day.
It is a big day.
Lots going on.
Yeah.
I'll probably just keep playing Skyrim. So I haven't even touched Arkham City. That came from last film at the same time.
Skyrim, yeah. Yeah.
But Arkham City turned up at the same time. I haven't touched it.
I kind of stalled.
You've been ruined by Skyrim.
There are dragons and everything. I've been Skyrimmed.
If you loved me, you'd Skyrim.
Is that when
yeah.
you something something with yeah. something Murdoch?
Yes. Wrinkle. Yes.
Puckered.
Yes.
All over.
Yeah.
Ah, isn't it? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Jumpers for goalposts.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, I think we've all had enough.
Yes, thank you, listener.
Yes, thank you, listener. You're awesome.
We appreciate you.
We do. We appreciate you.
We appreciate you.
Deep down in the pit of our stomach, yeah. where our wombs are.
Well, I love you. I'm just going to come right out and say it.
I love them in my womb.
Do you?
You never really pronounce the B on the end of that.
No, you do as well. It's pointless otherwise.
Thank you very much. You're awesome, as Jane already said. We outie.
Bye. Bye.
Shame.
Why do you feel shame?
I feel guilty that
Why do you do these things if they make you ashamed? Do you think you'd do less of them?
I'm a lapsed Catholic who was never a Catholic. And that's why I feel shame, because I feel the guilt and shame of a Catholic, yet I've never been a Catholic, which adds to my shame.
I told someone earlier on that Greeks are the Jews of the Mediterranean.
Boy, yeah, that's probably true.
Sebagala. The Whale House by Andrew Cheverton and Chris Doherty. The Whale House by Andrew Cheverton and Chris Doherty. The Whale House. 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 The Lake. The Whale House. Not the Lake House. The Whale House. Fucking idiot. The lake house.
Oh, cool.